Hi, guys. I just want to say that Tom and I really have enjoyed doing these podcasts together. I hope that you've actually enjoyed it and, like myself, have actually learned things. This summer, on August 24th, we are going to do an amazing event right here at Under the Stars at Riverside in all over British Columbia. We are going to do a live podcast. We're interviewing a couple of really interesting guests. We'd like to invite you to be there. I believe that you will not only enjoy it, but will be challenged and encouraged by it. So, August 24th, for more information, go to mscproject.com or to underthestars@riverside.ca. Save the date. Look forward to seeing you there.
And we are back, Greg. Oh, wow, this is wonderful. And just to celebrate season two, I am going to ask you a question. Mm. And I hope you have an answer. Because if you don't, I am going to laugh for a little while.
You'll be disappointed.
There is nothing as powerful as an idea whose time has come. Mm. Who said that?
If memory serves me correctly, Victor Hugo.
Oh, okay, Mr. Director, you have to put in a round of applause for Greg on that one. It is Victor Hugo. And in this season, Greg, we are going to be talking about big ideas.
Excellent.
Big ideas. The truth about the story of humanity, and this is what I think, is that at the core of many societal turning points are big ideas. You cannot tell the story of humanity without including the big ideas that changed the way we viewed the world around us, and in some places, the way we viewed each other.
Yep.
We viewed our shared humanity. And so, what better way to kick it off as religious people to talk about one big idea that came into religion, the idea of Satan.
Oh, fantastic.
How would you define Satan, Greg? Imagine I'm from the moon. And I land on planet Earth and I say, oh, greetings, what is Satan?
That's a great question. One is that I would describe him as a demonic influence on people and in the world in general.
A demonic influence. You know, that word is that's a big word.
It is.
Yeah. That's a big word. I think there's an entire field of study on demonology.
Yes.
Yep. You know. And I can imagine there could be some people who are watching us right now and thinking, wait a second, no way. I'm not a religious person. I don't believe in demons. Do we have other things in society that are, I guess, mysterious or that are evil in nature? Ghosts. Ghosts. The general public would say, yeah, sure, yeah. I think the idea of ghosts, I've seen a few strange things in my life, you know. Mm-hmm. In the area that we stay with, oh, Greg, you know this. There's a creature that is known,
In the lake.
Yeah. What is it called, by the way?
Ogopogo.
The Ogopogo.
Yeah.
Where I grew up in the Victoria Falls, we have the Nyami Nyami.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It just seems to me that all societies, or maybe let me ask it, Greg, do you think all societies, religious or non-religious, have the idea of some evil?
No, I don't believe all societies, all religious groups have a idea of evil. I think the concept of evil is actually a very powerful one, and how we understand it helps us, or it probably limits us and influences us
how we interact with other people and how we respond and how we interpret their response. So what I'm saying is that oftentimes we can say, oh, that person or that group of people were, I'm going back to my word that I used, demonically influenced. They did evil, they did bad things. I'm going to use, for example, the Second World War, a very famous dictator, leader, politician, Adolf Hitler. And again, he did some very dramatic and very disturbing things, primarily to the Jewish people. But you go over to Stalin, did a lot of damage to the Ukrainian people and a few others. So there's a lot of other people, groups that got in the crosshairs of some of these very powerful and destructive leaders. And we see the response on it. So we oftentimes excuse the person. Well, he was under demonic influence, et cetera, on it. And we say, well, it's kind of like they were doing it, but they were inspired by this force.
Yeah, but I understand people who will then say, Greg, if you can't measure something empirically, you know, then it doesn't exist. Okay, so let's go back to your example, World War II. Okay, you have this individual who is going out and doing atrocious things to other human beings. And then what do we say? Oh, he's inspired by the devil.
Yep.
But you can't measure the devil, can you? Like, can you say, okay, this is 25% devil, you know? If you can't measure it, someone would argue and say, if you can't measure it, then it doesn't exist. Now, how do you respond to that?
how do you respond to the devil, or how do you respond to the demonic influence or power that he has on individuals?
Yeah, but...
So I'm just saying, it's just for clarity. So what you're saying is that how do you measure it? I love that question, and I don't have a brilliant answer for you, but I think there's a couple of things that we can look at.
Mm-hmm.
One is that, and I'm going to use this for example, Adolf Hitler.
Yeah.
Adolf Hitler, for many years, was a nice guy. He was a beekeeper, I understand. He sang in the church choir.
I'm told he was a theologian also.
Poor one, maybe. But he was, you know, he reported on the First World War, et cetera, et cetera. And he saw the atrocities of the war that took place in the First World War. And in turn, this gave him an understanding and how to go forward on it. My point is that I would argue that for a good portion of his life, he was not under a demonic influence. So the last portion of his life, and I don't know how many years precise, but let's say the last 15 or 20 years of his life, he was under a demonic influence. So can I say, well, that was a 30% increase or a 10%? No, I can't. But I feel very confident that there was, at some point in time, he became inspired by all sorts of other motivations that he had, imperial concepts of what he wanted to do in Europe, and the human greed side of humanity perhaps took over, and that opened him to be influenced to a greater degree. So Can I say that it was a 30% increase, 100%? No, but I can say with pretty high degree of assurance that when he was out keeping bees, he probably wasn't demonically influenced.
Yeah, but you're saying here, I guess my argument is that, or the argument I'm bringing to the table here, is that this big idea of a devil or demonic influence cannot be measured. And if it cannot be measured, someone can argue and say, well, then it is not real.
And that's where I'm mean, coming to.
Hitler, his what he did was maybe a result of his own personal traumas or his society was in. I mean, guy lived through the First World War and, you know, he has a not quite the most pleasant history. Maybe it is just he's a result of his society. So why do we need to, you know, attach the idea, this big idea? Because whenever people do bad things, we have always just thrown this idea. This has become an idea. We throw it. People say, oh, look at that. It's demonic influence. It's demonic influence. But you can't measure demons. Am I being too scientific about it?
So let me ask you this here. Mm-hmm. You have a couple of children, three of them, if I recall correctly.
Yes.
And you have a lovely wife.
Or two. I'm African. No, I'm joking.
Yeah. So my question to you is, your youngest daughter and your oldest daughter, how much love does your older daughter have versus your younger daughter? Do you, and if, first of all, can you quantify that they do love you? Probably you would, there's a case to be made.
Yeah.
But if you can't quantify it, does it exist? So what I'm saying is that your child loves you. They say, oh, I love you, Daddy. Well, you could say, could you quantify that for me? Daughter, I think your love for me has decreased by 10% from last week. Would that be a fair comment? So what I'm trying to say is that if we have a hard time as humans saying, well, we have a child that we live with and that we know, and we can say, well, the love decreased 30% over last week, then we have something to go by. But I would argue you as a dad living with this child from day one could not quantify that very effectively. So using your same strategy, then probably that child doesn't love you.
Yeah, I know, you throw my kids into the picture, the argument becomes a bit hard, you know. How about we settle on this one, Greg? Whether, back to demons or devils, whether they exist or not, while that cannot be measurable, people's experience of it is visible.
Yes.
So we can't measure it. So there are some things I guess we should accept that, you know, the science maybe has its limitations. So while we cannot measure whether the devil exists or not, but we are pretty sure that human experience is real. In the same way, because we're talking about my children here, and I'm thinking, yeah, you know, if they come to me and say, Daddy, do you love us? I would say, yeah. And I can't give them some scientific formula to measure it, but they can experience it, you know?
Yes.
Exactly. For example, they've grown to whatever age they are now, and I didn't slaughter them in the process. You know, you can experience something, and when you experience it, then it makes it real. Is that a fair argument?
It is. I think it's a very fair argument. And likewise, if you can do it with love, you can do it with the influence of love, then you can do the influence of evil.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it also applies to gods again. Mm. In that, few people out there will bring empirical evidence to say, well, you know, God exists because A, B, C, D. If you take A and mix it with B, therefore God exists. And if you take this formula and apply it anywhere else, you'll come up with the same answer. It might be a challenge. I'm not saying it's impossible. It might be a challenge. But my experience of God, your experience of God is real.
Yes.
Thus, my experience and your experience and what as a collective, as humanity, what we saw in the events of the world wars and the wars that are happening right now as you and I are having this conversation make us get to the point where we say evil exists?
Hi, guys. I just want to say that Tom and I really have enjoyed doing these podcasts together. I hope that you've actually enjoyed it and, like myself, have actually learned things. This summer, on August 24th, we are going to do an amazing event right here at Under the Stars at Riverside in all over British Columbia. We are going to do a live podcast. We're interviewing a couple of really interesting guests. We'd like to invite you to be there. I believe that you will not only enjoy it, but will be challenged and encouraged by it. So, August 24th, for more information, go to mscproject.com or to underthestars@riverside.ca. Save the date. Look forward to seeing you there.
And that's where I'm coming to, is I believe that we have a strong case to be made that we have evil exists. And much like we talked about here a moment ago, we can't necessarily quantify it, but we can point to it and say, yes, there is evidence of that. Following that, I've had a number of discussions with individuals, and I think they actually make a very strong point on this, is that the human being has a greater capacity to be influenced by evil than perhaps any other mammal out there.
Huh. Explain it.
So what I'm saying is that we see in using the Second World War and Hitler, the issues that the German people, or so the Jewish people, were put under, the torture, et cetera, et cetera. And we see many, there's fairly well documented, not only happened in Germany, but there's other dictators did a lot of atrocities, perhaps as bad or even worse than what happened in Germany in the Second World War. The point is that man's humanity, inhumanity to man, I think there's a saying that's his greatest sin. Mm. What I'm saying is that you see this ability for humans to be extremely brutal and extremely mean to another human being. In the animal world, you'll see a cat and a mouse. The cat will play with the mouse for a few minutes to maybe an hour. I have never seen this in real life. I've watched the movies where you'll see in the continent of Africa, lions take down a prey, and there's oftentimes a few minutes before that animal succumbs to the death. There is usually a moderately small, in comparison, timeline between when the attack happens to when the death occurs. Mm. I just remember reading and hearing recently, for me, it was very disturbing, about one of the cartels in Mexico that somebody had done something wrong. And I may have mentioned this before, but they resurrected. The person passed out with so much pain under the torture, they forced the doctor to come in and ultimately revive the person so they could torture him again.
That's cruel.
That is extremely brutal. And yeah. What I'm coming to is that to me is a sign of a very demonic, to me, a demonic influence. You don't see that in the animal world. They don't play with the prey just to try and revive it just so they can go torture it again. Mm. And so my point is that we only see this in the human capacity, the human experience on it.
So I guess the argument is that if humans can do that, then surely that has to be through demonic influence.
It doesn't. Let me back up here.
Yeah,
I think demonic influence pushes humanity in that direction. I don't think it forces humanity in that direction. Mm. At any time, human beings can stop. But they are not always forced. And what I'm coming to is that I remember
a saying that I heard in the 70s, I think, you know, the devil made me do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like...
blame Satan.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, somebody back there did it to me. And it's I'm just kind of innocent bystander. Yeah. I take no personal responsibility for it.
Yeah.
And I feel that is extremely... that is not a correct way of looking at it, because then everything is somebody else's fault. I take no responsibility. And this is one of the things that I have to, for me, when I've studied other world religions, Shintoism talks about much more taking personal responsibility. You yeah. have Hindus have that similar concept that we have to take some personal responsibility for it. So their Christianity has a very well developed idea about evil and Satan, mm-hmm. or however we want to term it, this demonic influence. It's a well developed image that we have today. And that is not always the case with Christianity, but it certainly is today. We have the the comic where they have this three pronged critter tossing people into a
with a nice tail that has a
and it's something right out of.
But I want to push what you just said for a second. Allow me to just push back. Kind of a way, okay? I want to push back at what you're saying. Because if you're saying, let's talk about Hinduism. Mm. You know, you referred to Hinduism. In the Hindu tradition, they do not have a devil, per se. Okay? Right. There's no devil in the Hindu tradition. They are just people who do good things and bad things. Mm-hmm. So sometimes they are good, sometimes they are bad. But they're all children of the gods, or a god, okay? You just do good or bad things. And in Hinduism, I guess, the line between good and bad is so blurry. Mm-hmm. You just move into one or the other, okay?
Yep.
So there's no devil. It's people. People have to take responsibility. You just move between that. And
the Sikh community has a very similar understanding.
Okay, but in Christianity has a clear line, and in Christianity it's either you are good or you are evil, and I'm saying, no, I guess Christianity has it wrong, Greg. Don't you think so? I mean, the line should be blurry there. I mean, even in the Bible, I mean, you've seen it in the Bible where, you know, it says an evil spirit from the Lord. That's blurring the lines right there. You know, yeah. God hardened Pharaoh's heart. That's blurring the lines. Is it a bit more blurry than what Christianity likes to, you know, to push it? Like, I don't think it's clear. I don't think it's as black and white as we would like it to be. The idea of a devil being this one creature that's here, or being, or whichever you want to call, you know, and you're either good or you're bad. I think the line is not as clear as we'd like it to be. I think it's gray. I think it's a very blurry gray. Have you not had an experience where you did something and you thought you were doing good, only for someone to come back and say, oh, Greg, by the way, man, you hurt me with what you did. And then suddenly you did something bad. So does it mean when you were doing it, you were influenced by Satan and doing something good, but actually, no, you meant to do something bad, and then now you've discovered, like,
oh, and my case is incompetence. that's a really interesting question. Is that does doing good one time, ultimately with greater understanding, turn out to be something poor or bad later on? The progression of understanding and the right and the wrongness of it is a very interesting to delineate between those two. There is a clear line between ignorance and doing something out of ignorance and doing something out of evil influence.
Wow, you're getting deep into the grays here, Greg. Explain that.
So in my world, one of the businesses I was involved with early on is that I was growing plants, and I still do grow plants. And some of the things that I thought were the best for the plant, it turned out not to be the best. For example, it's fertilizer is good, but too much fertilizer is bad. So am I doing a good thing by putting fertilizer on?
Yes.
Can that same thing be bad if I put too much on?
Yes.
So from a pure point of ignorance, I wasn't maliciously going out there to destroy the crop. I went out there from a point of ignorance. I thought, oh, a little bit is good. A whole lot is going to be better. So I'm operating from the point of ignorance, not the point where I'm maliciously going out to trying to destroy that plant. That is the difference between ignorance and where I'm coming from is that we're...
Greg. Yeah. Okay, you know that statement, you know, they say the devil is in the details.
Yes. Unfortunately.
Are you now suggesting that the devil is in the ignorance?
That is a wonderful saying, but it is I don't believe it to be an accurate statement.
But you just said it.
I just said that I did a bad thing. I didn't say I was as influenced from a demonic point of view.
Yeah, no, you said you come with fertilizers.
Yes.
Or a fertilizer.
Yeah.
And you intend to do good, but because you are ignorant, instead of putting one scoop, you say, well, if this thing is good, I'm going to put 10 scoops, and then you burn the whole thing up.
Yeah.
And because you are ignorant, you have done something evil. Therefore,
no.
Hence, the devil is in the ignorance.
I want to stop you there.
Okay.
Did I do something evil? No, I did something stupid. There's a difference between doing something evil and doing something stupid. Some days the line is a little gray, but, but what I'm saying is I did something stupid. I didn't do something evil.
And I think that proves my point, Greg, that the line is not as clear as we want it to be. Because, I mean, in the world of plants, again, okay, one scoop would have done well. One and a half scoops, you know, the plant will survive. Maybe just a bit more might start to be bad for the plant. Like, and that formula doesn't apply to the next plant or the next plant or the next plant, correct? So the line is gray. Christianity wants to say there is good and there is bad. There is evil and there is goodness. And I'm saying, somewhere there.
So let me give you another a story that for me was an illustration of how human beings could do something evil.
Yeah.
Some time ago, I had the fortune to go to a event, a nice event, and this was a number of years ago, and they were talking about the Iran-Iraq war. And what came up was this dad that I was talking to had a couple of sons that were in the military, and they were going over there. And I said, oh, yeah, this is really a difficult situation with, trying to sort this thing out. Oh, he says, no. He says, he started to use, and for me, was the first bridge to doing something evil. He dehumanized the people over in Iran.
Yeah.
So you dehumanize them. You take them from a person, a neighbor, a friend, associate,
and you turn them into something less human. And he used the word dogs. They live like dogs. They operate. And he wanted to dehumanize them. And again, historically, that has been done in war, where you dehumanize the enemy and then you send your troops in, because it's not a moral issue to go kill a cow or anything else.
I hear you, yeah.
But if you say they're a fellow human being that has the same feelings and challenges and empathies and all the stuff that we have, then it becomes much more difficult to shoot the person or to kill them. But if you dehumanize them, then it's easier for the military ground people to go out and slaughter them. So what I'm coming to is that is the first step, in my opinion, where we start to dehumanize the other person. They are this race, this color, this language, whatever, however we want to divide people. And I think that is the key. You start to dividing people, then all of a sudden you open yourself up to being influenced to say they are not like I am, so therefore I can treat them like garbage. So that at that point in time, that is the bridge that is typically used in many in the last 200 years of warfare, is to first of all dehumanize the enemy. Secondly, once you got them dehumanized, then it's not a moral issue to treat them like crap.
Yeah, because they're not human.
They're not human.
Yeah.
And so what I'm coming to is that at that point in time, it opens the door up in my thinking to be influenced to treat them at a disgusting and horrible level.
I am saying, Greg, when you dehumanize, at that point when those who run the industrial military complex, when they are dehumanizing other human beings, at that point, don't you think the door has been open already?
Hi, guys. I just want to say that Tom and I really have enjoyed doing these podcasts together. I hope that you've actually enjoyed it and, like myself, have actually learned things. This summer, on August 24th, we are going to do an amazing event right here at Under the Stars at Riverside in all over British Columbia. We are going to do a live podcast. We're interviewing a couple of really interesting guests. We'd like to invite you to be there. I believe that you will not only enjoy it, but will be challenged and encouraged by it. So, August 24th, for more information, go to mscproject.com or to underthestars@riverside.ca. Save the date. Look forward to seeing you there.
Before they even fire the shots, at that point when they start saying, well, you know, these people, you know, referring to them as these people or those people live like this and like this, they are not like us, they live like this, they're not like us. At that point, I think at that point, the door has been open already. And so there is no clear line, what I'm saying, Greg, there's no clear line where you say, oops, as soon as you jump over this line, you've stepped into evil. But if you are still on this line, other side of this line, you're still on the good side of things. It is blurry. It is extremely blurry. And while Christianity has said good, evil, I like that big idea. Don't get me wrong. I like that big idea. But Hinduism has also given us something that I think we should incorporate into that idea, that the line is not as clear as we'd like it to be. Because at that point, let's go back to your illustration. You have the stakeholders in the political system who want to attack another country, place, people, / whatever. And the first thing they do is, already at that point, because they want to do it, I think evil is already in the picture. When they come and say to the troops, listen, this is a disgusting race of people, evil is already in the picture. You know, and when the shots are now fired where they are, evil is still in the picture. But I cannot anyway in that process go there and then draw a line and say, okay, if they had stopped here, there would still have been good.
I agree to you 100%. I don't think there is a line in the sand where we can say, okay, on this side we are demonically influenced, on that side, oh, we're not.
Yeah.
First of all, I think we oftentimes underestimate the intelligence behind evil.
Huh. Talk to me about that.
So, from the Christian narrative,
yeah,
going back in Scripture, we see that the primary person that we point to is Lucifer. Yep. We in the Christian is Lucifer.
Mm-hmm.
Lucifer in the Old Testament, part of it, is described as an angel of light, a brilliant person.
Yeah.
Brilliant as in, it sounds like there was some, he literally could light up the room. But I believe that it was also brilliant intellectually also. He, in turn, deceived a third of the heavenly beings, angels, etc. on it.
Mm.
These angels are pretty sharp bunch of people. They're
beings.
Beings, yeah. Excuse me, beings.
Yeah.
Beings. They have a lot going for them intellectually, so they so happen to choose him. So my point is that Lucifer had to be brilliant at what his arguments were, had to be brilliant at his position to get a third of the angels to follow him. That's mm-hmm. a huge number.
Yeah.
So does this being have brilliant insights into human nature? He's been studying us for a while. Does he have the capacity to work languages, structures, and systems? I think we underestimate the genius of Lucifer, and he in turn is the epitome that we in the Christian narrative use to describe this evil influence.
Yeah, in the Christian narrative, Lucifer, the angel of light, and his followers believed Lucifer's argument.
Mm.
Okay, which I think goes back to what we're talking about. In fact, let me say it this way. In the Christian narrative, in the Christian context, oh my, here are some big ideas and big words. Demonology.
Yes.
And angelology.
Mm.
Okay. The lines between the two are very blurry.
Yep.
And the very name Lucifer demonstrates that.
Yes.
Because here is a being who does evil, and yet his name represents good.
And at one time was good.
Exactly. And so, I mean, you and I can talk for forever to try and answer the question, at what point in his existence, we don't know. And here we are even saying he. That's a topic for another day, I guess. You know, at what point in this being's existence did they make the switch? You know, what was the catalyzing event? And all of those questions. And in Christian tradition, which I think we should talk about, the line is blurry.
Mm-hmm.
The line is very blurry. And in fact, Christianity is built on ancient Judaism. Hence why we refer to it as the Judeo-Christian worldview. You know, the Jews didn't have it figured out also.
No.
You know, they, throughout their history, in fact, scholars argue now that their approach or their philosophy behind demonology came into existence, or at least started to grow from around the, oh my, I hope my memory doesn't fail me, 5th century, somewhere there. Otherwise, before that, they didn't quite have it figured out.
Yeah, you have some references in Job.
Uh-huh.
And you have a few other references there, but it is not, we don't have this imagery like we do today.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't as clear to them.
Yeah.
You know, I think, again, in the Christian narrative, I think Jesus, the Messiah, did a great job in, he actually pushed our understanding of our theory on demonology further than it had been pushed before. Because there is that one place where he says, the enemy comes only to kill and to destroy.
Yep.
Mr. Director, make sure you throw that text on the screen so that we see it. The enemy comes only to kill and to destroy. So in saying that, he's actually just making it clear that, hey, this individual is the one behind all the killing, all the destruction. You know, he makes it clear who is behind it. And yet for you and I as human beings, I mean, we can choose which side we want to align ourselves with, whether we want to be on the side of good or on the side of bad. But the very nature, our very nature, makes us such that we can easily move to the one that we don't want to be. I will be the first to say I appreciate the Christian narrative, but I do think that Hinduism throws something into that conversation that is really worth taking seriously, or the Baha'i faith. Okay. Yep. They believe that darkness is the absence of light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, night is the absence of daylight. You know, kind of approach. Cold is the absence of heat, and therefore, by that reasoning, evil is the absence of good. So they also don't have a kind of like a devil that they've nailed down to say, oh, it's a devil. They're saying it's the absence of good. What that does, Greg, what that does, and I think you and I would agree on this, is that it says to the human being, you can take responsibility.
Yes. Yeah.
You can choose to act differently. And therefore, that then begs the question, is there such a thing as demonic power over me? Like, can I say, oh, I didn't mean to do it. The devil made me do it. I think no. Am I off to lunch on that one?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I know. I appreciate what you're saying regarding the Baha'i comments. There is value in the fact that we have to take some responsibility. We need to take responsibility. At the end of the day, this is a very important point in the meta narrative of, I think, most religions, is that the human being has the power of choice.
Mm-hmm.
Not all, but many. And I want to say the Zoroastrianism. Again, this is.
It's a very Persian idea, by the way. Persian religion.
Yeah, it's
beautiful. Yeah.
And so my understanding is that they have this eternal struggle with evil. You're never going to get rid of it. The yin and the yang concept.
Yes.
Yep, that's it. And then the next step is, using this same process, is that You got to have, to have day, you have to have night. And on a magnet, you have to have a north, you can't just have a one pole, north pole. You have to have both poles. There's all sorts of illustrations that say it forces this concept that you have to have a demonic influence to appreciate a good influence. What you're coming to is that if I'm in between here, so I should be able to take responsibility back and forth, and therefore it is my choice all the way along.
Yeah.
And I agree to a point. What I'm coming to is, if you go back into you're the one that mentioned it here a moment ago, the stories of Christ when he was on this earth, there was examples when people came to him that were demonically influenced, and he cast out devils, some of them seven devils, etc. So that person, or persons, and there's several events, had got to the point where they were no longer be able to operate freely without the influence of the devil making them do it. So there is cases. Yeah. So there's cases is that where you can see the person, and I'm not sure what path they went down and how they acquired it, but they could not take responsibility because they were totally influenced by the demonic spirits that were in them. So I am with you 90% of the way, except there is cases where that is the case.
You know what, Greg?
Yeah.
I think you're right, my friend.
Oh, fantastic.
I think you're right. Because as much as we can grow in doing good, I mean, what's the English? They say something along the lines of, little love will go a long way, smile, because smiling is contagious. You can build upon good.
Yes.
And I think you can also build upon evil to a point where it takes over, to a point where, wow, it's a very dark picture, but it's a, like we defined it this way. We cannot, it's hard to tell you how it happens scientifically. Like I cannot tell you how it happens, but in the short history of humanity, most people I think will agree with us to say we have seen it. Where you just stop and try and make sense of why someone did such a thing, and there are no easy answers. Absolutely no easy answers. Mass murderers, people who abuse, and a lot of things that we have seen. You know, I worked with an orphanage in an earlier time in my life, and I can attest to how people would rape children, abuse children, and then there was a time where people thought that by forcing yourself on a baby you can cure yourself of HIV.
Yeah.
And so we had all these children.
Oh no.
Just babies with HIV positive. And then they'll take these children, just leave them by the door at the orphanage, or just leave them on the street, and good luck finding answers on why people do that.
Yeah.
And I think, yes, Jesus, the story of Jesus really does bring out that fact that it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you dwell on it, the more you practice something long enough, you become so good at it, you can do it with your eyes closed.
Yeah. Yeah.
The more you dwell on it, it becomes you.
Mm.
But that dark picture doesn't tell the whole story. The more good you do also, that also becomes you.
Yes. And I think that's you're pushing us in an area that is kind of interesting. What I hear you saying, and what I have seen too, is that people become so influenced by this demonic force that, as you just well said, they can't do anything other than that. That is them. And in the same breath, I have seen people that are so good at doing good, they can't not but do good. Yeah. And it's just their character, and even when these people go through difficult times, they still spit out sweetness.
yeah. I know a few people like that. You know, you sit and you wonder, do you ever have a bad day?
Yeah.
Because it just sounds like all they do is, you know, they bring a little sunshine wherever they are.
Hi, guys. I just want to say that Tom and I really have enjoyed doing these podcasts together. I hope that you've actually enjoyed it and, like myself, have actually learned things. This summer, on August 24th, we are going to do an amazing event right here at Under the Stars at Riverside in all over British Columbia. We are going to do a live podcast. We're interviewing a couple of really interesting guests. We'd like to invite you to be there. I believe that you will not only enjoy it, but will be challenged and encouraged by it. So, August 24th, for more information, go to mscproject.com or to underthestars@riverside.ca. Save the date. Look forward to seeing you there.
It can be the cloudiest of days, and yet there they are. And that goes back to something you said here today, Craig, that one of the great gifts we have as humanity is that we can choose.
Mm.
So here are two paths here, and you can choose one. Is it going to be the one that piles up goodness in your life and in those around you? Or will it be the one that piles up evil in your life and thus spewing evil to those around you? I mean, I choose goodness on any given day. Hands down, I will choose goodness.
I'm really relieved to hear that.
Yeah, because you have to live with me. I'm your friend, by the way.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, I think the point you make is actually really a powerful one. Is that if we consistently are in that direction, it'll happen to us. It becomes part of our character. And I really like the fact that there is a strong case to be made that each person, no matter where they are, what society, what background, there is still choices to be made. And again, they may be under a family influence, society influence, but they still have the ability to choose. And it may not be a particularly, they may not see this watershed decision as one that will change their life. But oftentimes, little decisions lead to a path that leads us into a path of destruction, sadness, and et cetera. And ultimately, the other path will lead us to a much happier, much fulfilling life. And I think it's oftentimes the little decisions that we have to be aware of, and how we daily choose to say, yes, I'm going to, even though I have been offended or damaged, I'm not going to go there, even though I love to go there. And I think for me, that is where my biggest magnetic attraction is to evil, is to retaliate.
Yeah.
And I want to get even. And I figure that the world should treat me fairly. And when that doesn't happen, I am open to doing some very bad things very quickly.
Yeah. So again, back to probably to end this, Greg, Victor Hugo, there's nothing as powerful as an idea whose time has come. In our collective existence as humans, at some point, I don't know when, maybe we need to have a show where we figure out when these ideas came into being. I don't know when, But this idea came into our collective consciousness, the idea of evil or Satan or devil or whatever you want to call it. And it has changed us. Greg, I would like you to summarize for us here how, if someone, if I'm to ask, say, Greg, how did this idea change the world? Was it for the good or for the bad? We have this idea. It's a big idea. And we operate, you know, on a daily basis with it. Sometimes we're not even conscious that we're using this idea to make sense of reality. Now, I'm asking you to summarize for us, how has this idea impacted the world? Is it for the good or for the bad? You go for it, and then I'll tell you how I summarize this whole thing about how, at the end of life's journey, when someone says, Greg, this idea came into humanity, what do you think? Was it a good idea or a bad idea? What would you say?
So I would like to use an example that appeals to me.
Yeah.
Are airplanes a good idea or a bad idea? And my point is that a few hundred years ago, they understood very a limited amount of information about aerodynamics, but they were starting to get a concept in, and they were starting to realize that, you know, as speed increases, pressure decreases, and so they were fooling around with all sorts of wings and propellers, et cetera, and they finally start to figure this thing out. And as their understanding of the concept grew, the capacity to utilize that concept was amazing. And today, we have airliners that take people to vacations in tropical warm places, which is a very good idea.
I think so.
It's a very wonderful idea.
Especially at this time of the year in Canada.
And we also have airplanes that load up with bombs and bullets and drop them on people.
Mm.
So are airplanes bad or good? I'm arguing that, again, it's an idea that as we have understood Satan, or the demonic influence, now that we understand it better, we can clearly make better choices in how we respond to things around us.
Mm.
And for me, I believe that I go back to understanding the concept of Satan, demonic influence, demonology, has given me the capacity to give clarity and to be able to define it in my thinking. And I now have a clearer understanding when the paths diverge.
Wow, yeah.
That would be how I appreciate the evolution of our understanding of this demonic influence.
Yeah. I would say my summary of it is that pretty similar to yours. If I were to ask the question, can Christianity exist without a villain? The answer becomes very complicated. But the answer is clear because of this big idea of evil. Then I'm realizing that Christianity, or at least the teachings of Christianity, are valuable more so because this idea shines a light on the alternative.
Yes.
The big idea shines the light on, if not this, then that.
Yeah.
And if I didn't have this idea or this bright light shining on that thing, then I wouldn't know it. I'll be fumbling in the dark. So I guess at the end of the day, yeah, it's a. I'm happy for the idea. Yeah. I'm grateful we have that idea. We do not have it all figured out.
No.
It's not, you know, like we were saying, there's a lot of gray in between.
Mm-hmm.
But then we are able to recognize when we skip to the other side, once we move from the gray.
Yeah.
We are able to say, whoa, let's stop. This does no good to our collective existence as earth dwellers.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. It does no good.
Yeah.
You know what, Greg? I'm going to make a request to our viewers.
Mm.
You and I are going to be talking about so many big ideas, and of course, many of them are not as black and white as we think they are, but they are big ideas.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
In our first season, we had a number of people who watched and they got in touch with us, and they a good number of them, I'm pretty sure they are watching us right now, and I just want to make a request.
I want to thank them.
Oh, that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
Thank you for supporting us.
Mm.
Thank you for watching. I mean, Mr. Director, which camera should I look at? Thank you for watching. Thank you for reaching out to us. Thank you for communicating with us. We really appreciate that.
Mm.
And in fact, a good portion of your feedback is what has brought about this season that we're doing right now.
Yeah.
And so I want to ask you to do us this great favor. Please subscribe.
Mm, yes. Yeah.
It does a lot to help us carry on doing what we're doing. So if you've been watching this and you find this material helpful, please subscribe. Thank you.
Hey, excellent.